Hello and welcome to the Web3 podcast. This is the show that simplifies Web3 and shines a light on some of the incredible creators, investors, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders on this brand new frontier of the internet. If you have listened to any of the previous episodes, you'll know that we typically have a fully doxed policy. So we only usually interview guests who have revealed their full names. Given that the theme of this episode is on privacy, we have made an exception, but please know that I have verified Alex's identity and he is legit. So without further ado, I'd love to welcome Alex to the podcast. Alex is a leading privacy advocate and a Monero expert based in Germany. He runs a monthly Monero podcast and also runs TipXMR, a platform that allows streamers to accept payment in Monero. If you're wondering what Monero is, don't worry, you've come to the right place. But until then, Alex, welcome to the show.
Wow, what an introduction. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Really glad to have you on. So just before we get into Monero, I would love to hear a little bit about your background and really how you got into Web3 to begin with.
Yeah, so I guess I got started with Bitcoin around like the 2017 hype cycle. And in 2018, I decided I'm so interested in this topic of cryptocurrencies and the new emerging industry that I will take up a job in the industry. And so what I did is I started working for a German crypto news publication, and I would write articles and I would research different coins. I already had like this leaning towards privacy and I was starting to dive deeper into Monero. And yeah, this job really gave me the opportunity to do it full time and yeah, get paid while having fun learning. And so I learned about Monero. And then eventually after 1 year, I said, okay, I'm not just going to report. I'm going to learn to code and really like start to work with the technology. And so I learned to code and now I'm a professional software developer, so to say. And I have the side project of TipXMR that is still under development. So unfortunately, we don't have the MVP ready just yet. But yeah, generally, my background is more like in the economic part. So the Austrian School of Economics is something that really is fascinating to me.
So quick question then, just to kick us off. Based on the theme of this podcast, I think there's a topic that we need to address first and foremost, which is that of why privacy is important. So why does privacy matter on the internet and and outside the internet? But why specifically does privacy matter so much?
I think it comes down to a moral argument that you as a human being have a right to privacy, that you own your own data and you are allowed to share it with somebody or not share it with somebody. So, and if two individuals agree on a voluntary basis to exchange their just property titles, I think they should have the right to do it privately. And the internet, now everything is recorded, so to say, and you have like three-letter agencies running a dragnet on everything that you do. And I don't know, it may come back to bite you at some point. Maybe the government changes and then you are suddenly deemed a criminal. Or I think there is like this sense of privacy that you are not being surveilled. And when it comes to cryptocurrency, I think there is a even more deeper need for privacy, which is that money, so just in the economic term, the money needs to be fungible. So this means that all units of the money commodity need to be indistinguishable from one another. And this is necessary so that prices can form. Because if we have a commodity that is not fungible, for example, like diamonds, they are all unique, then like if I have a price shield saying, oh, I want three diamonds for my pretzel, I don't know what three diamonds I'm going to get. And so we really need this fungible commodity. And in the digital space, this can only be achieved by obfuscating like the money flows, so to say, behind cryptography.
Interesting. And I want to know how good your pretzels are to be worth three diamonds, but maybe that's a conversation for another time. Okay, interesting. So I guess a question off the back of that then would be, what would you say to critics who would argue that this kind of entrenched privacy, you know, leads to illegal behavior or encourages illegal behavior.
Yes, it does. Or, well, it doesn't encourage it, so to say, but it allows for it. It tolerates it. And I think this just goes to show how great of a tool it is, that it is so inclusive that even the criminals can use it. And the moral character of an action does not come from the tool that is being used, but from the individual, the moral agent, the human being that is using the tool for whatever purpose. So I can use a hammer to, I don't know, build a house or hang up a picture, or I can use it to bash someone's skull in. And this is the same tool. Obviously, the moral character is coming from the human, and we cannot condemn the tool per se, because then, I mean, bank robbers use cars. Should we now outlaw cars? Bank robbers use shoes. Should we outlaw shoes? I mean, This just leads to an absurd, slippery slope of outlawing certain tools. And I think these tools are, in the end, a net benefit for humanity, because they make our lives easier and they raise the standard of living, which is benefiting us all.
And I suppose the other argument would be that crimes are committed all the time using fiat currency.
Exactly. Like, it's a hypocritical argument, because if you look at how much war also is being financed, like on an institutional level, the fiat money is just blood soaked. So I think it's like, it comes from a hypocritical standpoint to condemn crypto. When you look at in absolute terms, much, much, much more crime is being committed with fiat right now.
Mm. So let's get on to Monero then. So do you want to give us an overview as to what Monero is for our listeners that aren't familiar with this particular cryptocurrency?
Yes. And in preparation for our podcast, I wrote down a statement, so I'm just going to read it.
Please do.
So Monero is a free and open source cryptocurrency project, very similar to Bitcoin, but with a different protocol and code base, that was fairly launched in 2014 based on a proof of work secured P2P blockchain that has a dynamic block size and a static tail emission of coins. So if you like, the TLDR of that would be, Monero is what Bitcoin aimed to be. It's a cypherpunk tool that is digital cash, so to say.
And how exactly does it work? So, you know, is it untraceable? And how does Monero work, I suppose, is the kind of key question that I want to ask there.
Yes. So, like I said, it's very similar to Bitcoin. So most of the grand aspects of Bitcoin, there is some equivalent in Monero. The key difference now is that Monero, on the protocol level, so in terms of what transactions are deemed valid and can be included in blocks, and which transactions are not valid, it is different, because Monero enforces the privacy on the block, on the protocol. So this means every transaction automatically hides the sender, the receiver, and the amount of every transaction. And this results in chain analysis, like it can be done in Bitcoin, is really unfeasibly expensive in Monero. And therefore, like, the chain analysis companies don't trace Monero. And you also have this concept of untraceability and unlinkability. So untraceability means, like, within the blockchain, you are not able to say with certainty where the funds traveled. And unlinkability means now the connection from the blockchain to a real world identity. And just to give the example with Bitcoin, in Bitcoin, you can always, with any public blockchain explorer, see which address paid how much to what other address. And now the only link that is missing is the KYC process tying some address to a real person in the world. And then you can do some graph analysis and, like, cluster addresses and really have a clear picture of, like, how the funds moved and who transacted with whom.
So Monero prevents that, even if you're exchanging Monero to fiat, does it?
Well, it depends. Like, Of course, if you, for example, have an account with Kraken and Kraken offers Monero and you KYC your account with Kraken, and then you like deposit Monero in it, they can see that you deposited Monero from somewhere. But this is like the Monero are emerging out of like this gray fog from the blockchain somewhere, and they are not able, unless you like just withdrew from another exchange, but this is a very specific case, they are not able to like say where those funds came from exactly.
Just to quickly go back over something you said, you mentioned it would be unfeasibly expensive for an analytics company to kind of track the flow of Monero. That suggests that it's not impossible for them to do that. It's just very expensive. Is that true, or is it just basically untraceable?
So I would distinguish between broad blockchain analysis, where you are tracking everything or trying to track everything, and really targeted attacks, so to say, on a specific individual.
Okay.
And the broad surveillance, this is unfeasibly expensive and not doable. Like, you cannot do it. And but the targeted attack, where you, I don't know, also surveil the network traffic, like there you may be able to like de-anonymize a sender, or say at least with a probability that an individual did something. But what Monero offers is this plausible deniability. In most cases, like in 99.9% of the cases, you are able to say, but you can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And like, this is what matters in the end.
Okay, interesting. I can see why, from like a crypto anarchist perspective, why Monero would be a very attractive currency to use, and also just people concerned with privacy. Okay, so can we talk about the wider Monero ecosystem? You mentioned in our kind of prep call for this podcast, if you like, that you had Tip XMR, so your business, had just received a grant from the Monero Foundation. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. So I have to correct you right away.
Sorry, please do. As you can tell, I know very little about this.
Yeah. There is no Monero Foundation. So it's not like with Zcash. Zcash, for example, it's another privacy-focused cryptocurrency, and they do have a foundation. But Monero doesn't. It's just an open source community, just like Bitcoin, with people participating and contributing. And so there is this space on the official website, the getmonero.org website, called the Community Crowdfunding System. And there anybody can write in a proposal saying, I want to do something for the Monero project and I need this much money. And then they ask the community for funding, and the community gives feedback, says, oh, I like this idea. However, maybe you can tweak your proposal in this or that way. And then you have like this open funding phase where the proposer sets a goal, and then you meet the goal, and then you start achieving the milestones and getting payouts. And you can raise a proposal for, I don't know, making a video, translating some article, writing code. And so that's what we did. We had an idea. We said, hey, cool, we're going to do this. We're going to do this no matter what. But there is this community crowdfunding system. It would be nice to get like this carrot in the end. So there's like this Monero waiting for us when we
build it. Yeah. That's awesome. So where does the Monero community congregate? So we got in touch via the Monero subreddit, but in this kind of decentralized, anonymous world, where do communities form? You know, does everyone go under a pseudonym? How does that all work in an open source community like Monero?
Yeah, I think the subreddit is a great resource to go to, and to, it's like this hub where you can also find other links. For example, what might be in that area that you described is the Matrix rooms. So Matrix is an alternative chat protocol where you have like this federated system, and you can host your own Matrix instance and connect to other Matrix instances. And then it's like this self-hosted messenger, and it's also end-to-end encrypted. So you can have group chats end-to-end encrypted. And The Monero community has several rooms for like the research lab that is investigating the cryptography, writing papers and coming up with the new proposals for the protocol, or like the general community group. And also these groups are like decentralized. So you have certain individuals that just said, I'm really passionate about this. I'm going to invest my time and organize, for example, a regular meeting. And then the people come together, they discuss like their progress. And yeah, so it's really grassroots. And how I really got engaged in the Monero community is just like bringing the initiative and saying, hey, I want to do something. Does anybody want to support me in my idea? Or if you don't need any support, then just do it and say, hey, guys, I did something. And yeah.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. So, okay, what do you see? Because I can understand from, you know, where we see stable coins, for example, being increasingly regulated. Do you think that increased regulation of the space is a positive or a negative for Monero and the ecosystem? Or does it not matter based on the protections that Monero has from kind of outside prying eyes and linking this particular, or linking XMR, so linking the coin itself back to individual users?
Yeah, that's really a good question, because it goes to the core of why the project exists in the first place. Okay. And I would say this is coming out of like the cypherpunk philosophy that we want to create technology that makes it impossible to censor it in a way, yeah, or to limit the freedom of the users. And because if it's not based in the technology, so if it not the code is the law, but instead like humans make the law, then you always have this point of corruption where you can like infiltrate the power structure and bribe politicians and stuff like this. And with a computer, you don't have that. A computer, when it evaluates, for example, a digital signature, you cannot bribe it. In the end, it will tell you, yes, this is a valid signature, or no, this is not a valid signature. And everybody can do it. It's really like the power is back to the people. And with the use of like this arcane branch of mathematics, cryptography, we are now in the position to really create technology that has like these inherent uncensorable features. And so I think there will be a backlash from regulations, because of course there's power built on the fiat system. If you control the money supply, like you almost have godlike powers.
Yeah.
So of course governments don't want to lose this power, and there will be, I think, this fight between these ideas, which will manifest in technologies. And we have this cat and mouse game of the regulators like increasing the surveillance, and then the technology has some innovation and we are able to achieve something with cryptography or in a decentralized way that wasn't thought of before. And yeah, I don't know. The future is unknown, and all we can do is invest our time and energy in whatever end we think is more desirable.
Interesting point. I'm interested as well. So Alex, for the listeners that haven't read the title of this podcast, goes by the name Alex Anarcho. And I think the kind of what you're describing is a bit of a libertarian philosophy almost. So you mentioned moral actors at the beginning. So crimes are not committed by technology. They're committed by humans using that technology in a certain way. And it's clear, you know, you're kind of anti-regulation. Or are you? I don't know. Am I putting words in your mouth?
I'm pro-sovereignty for the individual.
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But the what I'm kind of interested to consider here is, if something is truly decentralized, right, it can't be taken down. You know, there isn't a mechanism for, you know, without taking down the entire internet, for bringing down something that is truly decentralized. And as you would have seen from previous episodes of this podcast, there are a number of entities out there building the first decentralized clouds. And once they're built, you know, suddenly it becomes really viable to host all sorts of things in a decentralized manner. So where, if there is something particularly nefarious put on, uploaded to a smart contract running on a decentralized server that basically can't be taken down, I'm talking, you know, a manual for creating explosives or something that could easily be misused by terrorist groups. Is that, do you think that's inevitable in terms of the way that this space is developing? You know, this march towards decentralization inevitably means that that kind of stuff is going to occur? Or do you think that we're going to end up in this kind of halfway house where individuals are still monitored? The fact that it's on the internet, well, I suppose it's already kind of the case now with Tor, etc. But I don't know. I'm just exploring this. Obviously, I'll edit this question down because I'm rambling a little bit. But
no, I think it's great.
Do you understand where I'm going with it? I'm kind of trying to understand, you know, one, would you support that world where anyone can upload anything, no matter the consequence, if that makes sense, because, you know, it's an individual's choice and it's also an individual's choice to look at that particular file, for example. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, is there a need to prevent that from happening? I know that's a kind of really roundabout question, but I'm interested in getting your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think Timothy May put it very succinctly in his Crypto Anarchist Manifesto. And there he wrote that crypto anarchy will make possible heinous crimes like child pornography and the worst imaginable stuff. And it's true. This technology does enable this as well. But what I think of first, for me, what the strongest argument is the moral case. And I think the moral case is, just because somebody is using the tool for something bad, there is no legitimate reason why I should not be using the same tool in a good way. Yeah. So there is this on the the deontological argument, so to say. And then also the consequentialist argument, I think, is also on the side of liberty here, because if you introduce this arbiter who then can deem what is acceptable and not acceptable, you have broken the principle. You are now in the space of negotiation where it only matters who is talking into the ear of that arbiter or who is that arbiter and what they think is acceptable and not acceptable. So I think we really have to eliminate this human component where we elevate some people to rule over other people. And instead we have to establish a world where we are peers, we are sovereign individuals that choose to interact with one another. And I think the implications of a world that is based on those principles are really deep. Like, for example, reputation will gain a huge importance in such a world, which is kind of paradoxical when you think of the world of anonymity and cryptography, then you have reputation. But I think it's logical, because if you don't have a reputation network, then you can easily spin up a million entities and just fake something and pretend reality just because of the sheer numbers. So you need some kind of mechanism to make the people want to be honest. So I think this is like also an incentive question. Instead of punishing people for not behaving the right way, you should give them like this positive incentive to be the right way, because it will just make their own life so much easier.
But do you not think that there's a counter argument there, to use kind of the example from the Crypto Anarchist Manifesto that you quoted there? So, you know, people will use this technology inevitably to commit heinous crimes, and they're less concerned about their reputation because they're anonymized.
Yep, I guess that's true. And in the end, I think, I'm an anarchist, as the name...
the name's the giveaway.
Yes. And I think war is mass murder. And I think when we just look at the bottom line, most crimes are committed by governments. And taking the power away out of their hands to kill all these innocent people and have like indirect consequences, you know, how much poverty is caused by inflation. And we're seeing it now again. Yeah, they print money like crazy through the pandemic. And now it's the poor people who suffer first because they don't have any savings in the bank. They don't have any houses where they can, I don't know, hang out. Like, they have to pay rent. The food prices go up. They cannot pay the fill up the gas tank. So yes, we will always have criminals and we will always have murderers and rapists. There is no paradise. And I'm not promising a utopia, but I think when we think about the principles that are guiding us and the incentives we are providing, the current system, of course, yeah, the politician that gets elected for 4 years, there is no long-term incentive to keep the ship afloat. Whereas when you make your own choices that are immediately impacting you, like, for example, if you go to the supermarket, you are shopping for yourself, and then yeah, you are really like making the best choices for you. And you are the person who's most qualified to make those decisions. So, yeah.
I think that's a really interesting point. And I think I'm very grateful that I've had you on this podcast, because I think your view really is really going to challenge many of our listeners here. I appreciate we've slightly overrun on time, Alex. So last couple of questions from me. Penultimate question, what resources, and by that I mean books, podcasts, articles, YouTube videos, whatever it might be, would you recommend that someone who is new to the kind of privacy Monero space take a look at?
Yep. So I think the most important resource is, of course, the official website. Like I said before, getmonero.org. Click around a little bit. You will find downloads for wallets that you can use. Also endorsed, like mobile wallets. There is also resources. Academic papers, if you want to read that kind of stuff, or there's a merchant list on there. There's also links for like chat groups and stuff to get connected. So this is really a great resource to get started. And then if you want to learn more about like these ideas that I talked about, I can recommend to you not only the Crypto Anarchist Manifesto by Timothy C. May, but also the Cypherpunk Manifesto, which is this. So if you don't know the birth of Bitcoin, this was originally published on the Cypherpunk mailing list. So it's really coming from this idea sector of the internet, so to say. Then
super interesting. Sorry, yeah. Go on. Didn't mean to interrupt.
No worries. So, and then there's this guy called Seth. His website is sethforprivacy.com, and he not only writes guides about like how to run your own Monero node with Docker or other useful like insights into the privacy space, like if you want to de-Google your phone or something like this. But he also has this pinned article called The Fungibility Graveyard. So if you want to read more stories about Bitcoin's lack of fungibility coming to haunt some users, you can check this out. And he also has a podcast called The Opt-Out Podcast, where he has like these privacy experts on, and they talk not only about Monero, but other tools related. Like I said before, there's the Monero subreddit. And then for current news, there is monero.observer. They really do a great job just gathering all the information from the different niches of the community and aggregating them. Then there's the Monero Talk podcast, which is really great. And finally, I would recommend the YouTube channel Monero Community Workgroup. There they upload like these talks from Monero core people and conferences. So I was just at the MoneroCon 2 or 3 weeks ago in Lisbon, and I also had a talk there. And yeah, it's just interesting content. And for me, like, I can watch these videos and talks all day, because I think it's fascinating that right now we are not only talking about ideas, but actually implementing them in the real world and them having an impact and being able to test out if these ideas are really revolutionary or just like a pipe dream.
That's super interesting. I think that's the largest number of resources that any guest has recommended on this show. So I'm very grateful. But Alex, you can't think I'm going to let you go without you recommending your own podcast, right? Where can our listeners find that?
So yeah, like you said, I have this German speaking Monero Mumble podcast. It's called MoneroMumble.de. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's geared towards the German community. That's why I didn't mention it.
No worries. I'm sure we've got loads of Germans listening to this English podcast.
Yeah. And So there we discuss like the current developments. And so mostly we go through like the Monero Observer and we talk about what's interesting. And then we also aggregate some like related news. For example, if the EU now wants to ban proof of work mining or something like this, then we also discuss it. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Alex. And then final question. If people want to reach out to discuss any of the topics that you've raised today, and I'm sure they will, how can they best get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can tweet at me, at Alex Anarcho. And I also have a website called alexanarcho.live. So live, like a live video. And there you will find some other links for like Mastodon or email address if you are into that kind of stuff.
Amazing. Alex, thank you so much. A really challenging and thought-provoking episode there.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
A huge thank you to Alex for sharing his views on what is no doubt one of the more controversial topics of Web3. I think given the scope of this podcast is to shine a light on this new frontier of the internet, it's really important that we don't ignore these difficult to talk about topics, which can be unsettling, liberating, or interesting, depending on your viewpoint. To check out the show notes, see upcoming guests, and listen to more episodes of this podcast, you can find us at www.theweb3podcast.xyz or on any major podcasting platform. If you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at Callum Wooders, that's Callum with two L's, or you can shoot me an email at callum@theweb3podcast.xyz. This has been the Web3 Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.